Hi, I'm Robin.
And I'm Chris. Together we're the Gen X couple.
Hey guys.
Take two. Not my fault.
Totally my fault.
Hello, everyone. So let's start off with a little poem. Lizzie Borden took an axe. She gave her mother 40 whacks. When she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41.
Yes. Welcome back, you guys. Since it's October, we figured we would kick off the official spooky season with a true story that I've been fascinated with for years and years and years. You guessed it, Lizzie Borden.
That's right. Today, we're going to take a deep dive into one of the most infamous murder cases
in
American history, the story of Lizzie Borden. It's a tale filled with shockingly violence, courtroom drama, and a mystery that has endured for well over a century. So let's go back to the summer of 1892 to the quiet town of Fall River, Massachusetts, where one of the most sensational murders of all time took place.
To understand the case, we first need to understand the family at its center. The Bordens were well known in Fall River. Andrew Borden, the patriarch, was a wealthy but notoriously frugal man. He made his fortune through real estate, banking, and textile mills. But despite his wealth, he refused to indulge in luxuries. While other affluent families in Fall River lived in lavish Victorian homes up on, quote-unquote, the hill, which was the city's most prestigious neighborhood, Andrew chose to keep his family in a modest, crammed house down on Second Street.
So Lizzie Borden was born on July 19, 1860. And was Andrew's youngest daughter. Her mother, Sarah, died when she was just 2 years old a few years later. Andrew married Abby Durfee Gray.
I feel like you didn't say that in a way that was understandable. So I think what you meant to say that her mother, Sarah, died when she was just 2 years old. And then a few years later, Andrew married Abby Durfee Gray.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Okay, love you.
Lizzie and her older sister, Emma, never fully accepted Abby as their mother and referred to her as Mrs. Borden rather than mother.
Huh.
The resentment towards Abby only grew over the years, especially as Andrew gifted property and financial support to Abby's relatives while keeping his daughters on a tight, tight budget.
Hmm. Despite their privileged upbringing, Lizzie and Emma were not part of Fall River's high society. Lizzie was involved in the church, she taught Sunday school, and participated in some local charities, but her social standing remained limited due to her father's reputation as a miser. As tensions grew within the Borden household, the stage was set for one of the most gruesome crimes in American history.
The morning of August 4th, 1892 was stiflingly hot.
Stiflingly.
In the Borden household were Andrew, Abby, Lizzie, and their maid, Bridget Sullivan, an Irish immigrant who had worked for the family for several years. Emma was away visiting friends, and tensions were already high, as just days before an argument had erupted over property Andrew had given to Abby's family, causing Liz and Emma to stop eating meals with their father and stepmother.
Liz? Like, you guys are buddies now? You said Liz instead of Lizzie. I love you. Anyway, So now, look at, you're rubbing off on me. Adding to the household's discomfort, the family had been suffering from an unexplained illness in the days leading up to the murders. Abby suspected food poisoning, but some speculated later that someone had been trying to poison the Bordens.
So around 9:30 a.m., Abby went upstairs to the guest bedroom to tidy up. What happened next was brutal. She was struck from behind with a hatchet. The first blow likely killed her, but the murderer continued striking her a total of 19 times. Her body was found lying face down between the bed and the dresser, her skull shattered and her blood pooling on the floor.
Andrew Borden left the house that morning, but returned around 10:45 a.m. He attempted to take a nap on the living room sofa, but his rest would be short-lived. Around 11 a.m., he was attacked with the same weapon. This time, the blows were concentrated on his face, leaving him nearly unrecognizable. He was struck at least 10 times, with one of his eyes being completely split in half. Gross.
At 11:10, Lizzie called for Bridget, exclaiming that her father had been killed. Bridget ran to the neighbor's house for help, and soon the police arrived at the crime scene.
As soon as the police arrived, the investigation into one of the most infamous crimes in American history began. Suspicion quickly fell on Lizzie due to her strange behavior and inconsistent statements.
Initially, Lizzie claimed she had been in the barn looking for fishing sinkers during the time of the murders. But when police examined the barn, they found no evidence that she had been there recently. Additionally, no footprints were found in the thick dust in the loft where she claimed to have been.
The police also learned that just a day before the murders, Lizzie had attempted to buy prussic acid, which is a deadly poison, from a local drugstore. She claimed it was for cleaning a sealskin cape, but the store clerk refused to sell it to her.
Further suspicion arose when Bridget and a family friend, Alice Russell, saw Lizzie burning a dress in the stove shortly after the murders. Lizzie claimed the dress had been stained with paint, but many believe she was destroying evidence.
And then there was the hatchet. The police found a hatchet head in the basement with its handle broken off. Some theorized that the handle had been removed because it was covered in blood, though that was never proven. Despite all these clues, there was no direct physical evidence tying Lizzie to the murders. Still, public opinion was divided, with some being convinced that she was guilty and others believing she was being unfairly accused. You're rubbing off on me.
Lizzie was formally charged with the murders, and her trial began on June 5th, 1893. The courtroom was packed with spectators and newspapers across the country reported on every detail of the case.
The prosecution painted Lizzie as a cold-blooded killer driven by resentment and greed. They highlighted her inconsistent alibi, the burned dress, and her attempt to buy poison. The defense, however, argued that there was no hard evidence linking Lizzie to the crime. No one had seen her commit the murders, and no blood was found on her person. The fact that she had fainted upon seeing the skulls of her father and stepmother in court also played into the narrative that she was too fragile and proper to commit such an act.
After an hour and a half of deliberation, the jury found Lizzie Borden not guilty. She was acquitted, but the shadow of suspicion never left her.
After her acquittal, Lizzie remained in Fall River, but was ostracized by the community. She and Emma inherited their father's fortune and moved into a grand mansion that they named Maplecroft. However, even in luxury, Lizzie found little happiness.
Emma eventually moved out after a mysterious argument, and Lizzie lived in isolation until her death in 1927 at the age of 66.
More than 100 years later, the Lizzie Borden case remains unsolved. Did she do it? Some theories suggest that Bridget Sullivan, who was the maid, if you remember, snapped after being ordered to clean windows in the heat. Others believe an unknown intruder was responsible.
Regardless, Lizzie Borden remains one of the most infamous figures in American history. Her story has been the subject of books, films, and even a horror-themed bed and breakfast at the site of the murders.
As if the story of the murders wasn't chilling enough, the Borden House remains one of the most haunted locations in America. Today, like Chris just said, it operates as a bed and breakfast, drawing paranormal investigators and curious guests who seek to experience the spirits lingering in the home.
Would you ever stay there?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
Maybe, but I would stay awake all night with the lights on. I wouldn't be able to bring myself to go to sleep.
So many visitors have reported seeing shadowy figures, hearing unexplained whispers, and feeling an overwhelming sense of unease, particularly in the rooms where the murders occurred. Some claim to hear a woman weeping, while others have reported hearing footsteps on the stairs, perhaps echoes of Lizzie herself.
Yeah, from what I've heard, the most haunted areas of the house include the guest bedroom where Abby was killed and the parlor where Andrew took his final breaths. I've also heard some rumors about the basement being haunted, but I'm not Sure, because a lot of times people aren't allowed in the basement, so I can't. And actually, I think that's where the hatchet head was found. Did I just
Yes,
say that?
yes.
But you know, these are all just stories from different people that I've heard over the years. And I've also heard that guests who have stayed overnight have claimed to feel sudden chills, have had their belongings moved, and even wake up to the feeling of someone standing over them, which is terrifying.
And paranormal investigators have also documented strange occurrences, such as the doors opening on their own, objects being thrown, and even voices captured in EVP recordings saying, "Help me," or "He's here." Whether or not you believe in ghosts, one thing is certain: the legacy of the Borden murders is very much alive. So would you dare to spend the night in the Borden house? If you do, be sure to sleep with one eye open.
Seriously, would you guys ever go? I, like I said, I definitely wouldn't. I'm way too scared to spend the night there. But Chris and I have actually been to the Lizzie Borden house twice, actually.
Yes.
And while we didn't see any ghosts, the first time we went, I had one of those point and shoot cameras with me. I had put new batteries in the camera to make sure I had enough juice to take all the pictures I wanted. But unfortunately, as soon as I walked in the house, the batteries were drained and I had to take all my pictures with my phone. That was a huge bummer. The
It
second
was.
time we went, we didn't actually go in the house. We did a tour, like a ghost tour around the area where they showed us where Andrew Borden worked, the church that Lizzie Borden went to, and stuff like that. But we've never had any real paranormal experiences there.
Yeah, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, me too. I'm a big chicken when we come right down to it.
And with that, we're going to close our investigation for today. What do you think? Was Lizzie Borden guilty or innocent? Let us know in the comments or on social media.
Actually, before we go real quick, I want to plug my book, The Deadly Garden. It's on Amazon and barnesandnoble.com. But I had actually done a podcast interview, which you guys aren't hearing this till August. And right now it's, what is it, September? September 7th. You know, we record in advance. So I had done a podcast interview with my friend Ashley, who's the one that helped us figure out how to even get this podcast started. Her, one of her podcasts is called The Bloggy Friends or Bloggy Friends, something like that. Go look it up, you'll find it. And wait, what was I going to
You did
say?
a podcast with her?
Yeah. Oh, we got to, I forget what I'm saying when I'm in the middle of saying it. We have been talking about podcasting and I forgot what I was going to say again. Oh, we were talking about editing podcasts and I was saying that I leave in all the mistakes and she was saying she likes that because it makes it sound more real. I don't know. What do you guys think? I feel like we'll restart if we make a huge blunder, but we leave in most of the mistakes we make, especially all Chris's mispronunciations for Christians, Chris's, Chris. And I think that makes it sound more real because we are actually just two regular people. We just live in a regular house with a regular family, with
That's
regular
true.
lives. Actually, we have great lives because we go to Disney all the time. But anyway, what do you guys think about that? Let us know.
All right, until next time. See you later, alligator.
In a wild crocodile.